Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson, and I'm an award-winning author, project coach, actor, TEDx speaker, creative, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking of authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. Nita Sweeney is the award-winning wellness author of the running and mental health memoir, Depression Hates a Moving Target, How Running with My Dog Brought Me Back from the Brink, and co-creator of the writing journal, You Should Be Writing, a journal of inspiration and instruction to keep your pen moving. She's a certified meditation leader, mental health advocate, ultra marathoner, and former assistant to writing practice originator, Natalie Goldberg. Nita founded the groups Mind, Mood, and Movement to support well-being through meditation, exercise, and writing practice, and The Writer's Mind to share using writing practice to produce publishable work. Nita also publishes the writing resource letter, Write Now Columbus. Nita lives in Central Ohio with her husband, Ed, and their yellow reb. All right, we'll cut that. Nita lives in Central Ohio. Oh, what's that?
No, go ahead.
All right. Nita lives in Central Ohio with her husband, Ed, and their yellow Labrador retriever, Scarlet. Welcome, my friend, Nita. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. I'm really excited to chat with you. It's been a little while and
I know.
Look forward to it.
Oh, me too. Thank you. Yeah, we met probably about 3 years ago now at the LA Book Festival.
Yeah, LA Times Festival of Books.
Okay, well, that's the proper term. Thank you.
No, and it was a big deal for me. I was, it's like a big deal.
Yeah, no, it was nice. It was, we share a publisher, Mango Publishing, and they put us together along with, I think, maybe three or four other Mango authors, and we shared a table at the book festival. And yeah, it was a nice time just to get to know everybody and kind of bond and just learn and chat, I suppose, right? It was, I'd never been to that festival before.
Well, it was interesting for me. I've been to a number of festivals, but nothing that large or that prestigious. And it was my first foray into any kind of book marketing. And so it's quite a way to begin.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, I agree. So, well, let's just talk about your book that you were there sharing and how you came to write, Depression Hates a Moving Target.
Well, I've been writing for a very long time, and I've actually written many books, 9, 10 manuscripts, but I was not successful in getting any of them published until this one.
Okay.
I had written mostly memoir. That's memoir and nonfiction is the area I'm most comfortable with. Yeah. So I'd had a few bad years, let's say. I have chronic depression. I'm bipolar. And I would write about that around the edges, but I never really dove completely into it. Mm-hmm. And then in 2007, we had a whole bunch of people die. People I love died. It was just a really bad year. It started with my niece, who was 24, and then 6 other people and a cat died, including my father-in-law. And then on December 30th, my mother died that same year.
Oh my gosh.
And that just threw me. I was already chronically depressed, struggling, had meds, had therapy. I was alive and managing, but just not, didn't feel like I was living my best life at all. Mm-hmm. And that just put me back into really a suicidal spiral. It really put me into just a bad, bad place. And then a few years later, I survived that. And a few years later, I saw that one of my high school friends was running. She had posted on, I think it was Facebook, "Call me crazy, but this running is getting to be fun." And I thought she was nuts. I really did. I thought she has lost her mind. She finally went over the edge. She was the same age, or I think she's a year older than me. And I was much larger then than I am now. She was about that size. Neither one of us had been athletic. We both rode horses and I'd been in the marching band, you know, but we weren't sports people. We didn't run. So I sort of watched her for a while. And she really did seem to be getting a lot of joy out of this running thing. And so I looked up the training plan that she was doing. It turned out to be Couch to 5K. And the plan said a lot more than this. But the thing that I saw was 60 seconds of jogging. And I swear, Brian, if it had said 65 seconds of jogging, or if it had said 60 seconds of running, I would have rolled back over and gone back to sleep. But there was something about 60 seconds of jogging that felt doable. And so it was a couple months after she had started, and I didn't tell anybody. I didn't even tell my husband, who I'm, you know, that's like my best bud, or my sister, who's my second best bud. But I leashed up the dog one day. I took a little digital kitchen timer, which was my best friend from meditation practice and writing practice and things like that, and leashed up the dog as a decoy. So the neighbors would just think I was taking him for a walk, and went down into this hidden area, this kind of ravine. It's called Donna Ravine. And we jogged for 60 seconds and I didn't die. And I know to people who run it, to me now, actually, I run, you know, tons of miles. That sounds ridiculous, but that's where I was with both my mindset and exercise. And that was the beginning of a journey that led me to start writing about that process. And I'm always writing anyway, so I'm always taking notes. And at first I thought I was writing a book about middle-aged woman, you know, runs races and runs a marathon eventually. And in the editing process, I realized what I was writing was a book about a woman trying to save her life. And when I got that angle, because that's really what happened, I had been on 6 medications. Now I'm on 1. I had been napping daily. Now I nap a couple times a week, depending on my stress level and how well I've slept that night. But nothing like the deep, dark, just gotta shut my mind off naps that I was doing. I've lost weight. I have energy. I mean, I've just really, I'm a different person. I have a friend who's helping me with the next book I'm going to hopefully come out with next year. And he said to me the other day, he said, "You just don't even seem like the person I met 20 years ago." He's like, I just don't even. And so that's that for me has been the transformation. I want to be really, really careful.
Yeah.
Because I still need meds. I still go to therapy. And there may come a day where I need more meds again. Not everybody wants to be a runner. So I'm not trying to say that, just start running and your life will be perfect. Not at all. But I do share it because I think exercise is undervalued, even though we hear about it now, which we didn't as much when I first started running. I just want to say that's an undervalued tool in the mental health toolkit.
Oh, I totally agree. And I have to have movement in my life. And, you know, and I used to race in endurance stuff too a long time ago. And you know, I'm not doing that anymore, but I still have to go for a walk and go to the gym and ride my bike a little bit. It just makes everything go better and smoother and more clearly, and I'm more confident. And you know, I mean, it just, and you don't have to run an ultra marathon. You can just go walk for 10 minutes or 20 minutes. I mean, just getting some fresh air and getting out in nature does wonders.
You don't have to do 31 miles and change. I mean, 30 is probably enough. No, I mean, a walk around the block, a brisk walk around the block where you just get your heart rate up just a little bit. That's what the science says, is just get it moving. There's so much research now.
Oh yeah. You know, and just sometimes if we're feeling a little stuck, I mean, just doing something as small as that just gets the next thing going and the thing after that going, and it just kind of builds on itself. You know, it's I'm right there with you.
Yeah. I feel like I'm preaching to the choir. Definitely.
Some
major stuff. I do want to say too, I did not have the stamina that it takes to get a publisher. I had tried that either.
Well, yeah. Let me ask you this. I mean, initially when you first mentioned that you have all these other manuscripts, did you ever think about self-publishing?
I did think about that, and I did some research, and I actually thought about self-publishing. Depression, It's a Moving Target. That was one of my, that was sort of plan C. We were at the end of plan B when I found Mango, or Mango found me, kind of, is what it was. But I'm the kind of person who likes gold stars and certificates and things like that. And so I wanted once in my life to have a more traditional publisher say yes and put something like that out in the world. And I also know now, knowing myself, and having been through the publishing process, that there are so many things behind the scenes that a publisher does. There's a lot that they don't do, but there are a lot of things that they do that I would not have known how to do. I could have learned it, but I still do have chronic depression. And so to have that team, behind me, beneath me, has been really important. I can't say that there won't come a day when I'll feel like, publishing, self-publishing something that maybe Mango isn't interested in, because that could happen. Because it does intrigue me. But no, I didn't. I really wanted, I call it the gold star. I really wanted the gold star. And I had tried unsuccessfully. I had pitched a book, a memoir, another memoir, which I won't go into the whole story about that, but a different memoir, which I still hope to publish that book as a family related thing. And I started getting just a few rejections, and I didn't have either the physical stamina or the emotional stamina to withstand that. And I really think that the training, the exercise, the structure, the discipline you learn from exercise, all of those pieces were really helpful to me when it came to pitching tons of agents, tons of publishers, and getting those rejections and being able to, cry a little bit and then take a step back and go, okay, today's another day. That happens in running too. I think that really prepared me for the long haul. And then also the long haul, once you get the book with a traditional publisher, or let's say you do self-publish, it's still a long haul. It still is. So that's, I mean, you've done both routes.
My first four were self-published, and I think it helped me get my last, the deal with Mango. But it's just it's there is no right or wrong way to do it, and I think it was just there are no accidents. It was perfect that your first book, was Depression. It's a Moving Target. I mean, you know what I mean? Just to get it out there into the world. And I mean, it's such a great title too. I think I've told you that before, and I'm sure everybody tells you that. But
Thanks. Yes, it's a phrase I've actually shared with people for years. I have a lot of friends who are in kind of the same boat where they have struggles, both in the mental health community and recovery. And sometimes we'll be talking to each other, and what this one friend of mine called me one day, and it was like 2 in the afternoon, 3 in the afternoon, and she was still in bed. She couldn't get out of bed, and she said, "I've got to just at least get up and wash my face. I'm just, because when you get chronically depressed, it can be that bad." And it just popped in my head. I said, "Depression hates a moving target. Just get up and sit up on the side of the bed, and then call me back." And I hung up. And a few minutes later, she called me. She goes, "Okay, I'm sitting on the side of the bed." I'm like, "Okay, remember, depression hates a moving target." And we did that until she washed her face. Eventually, she got something to eat, and then a couple hours later, she called me, and she was up doing stuff. But I've had people do that to me, and so that phrase just really stuck with me. That movement is, it's like we're fighting inertia. We're fighting inertia with writing. We're fighting inertia with exercise, with mental health issues. And the movement gets us off that zero place where we're stuck.
No, I love it. And I know it's helped my brother too. He's also bipolar, and he goes and walks once or twice a day now. And when I visit, I love walking with him in the morning. It's changed his life,
Oh, that's fantastic.
So I didn't realize you've been, I'm learning something new about you. I didn't realize you've been writing for so long prior to the book that we're talking about. You're a bit of a writer's advocate now, and you do a lot of different things, obviously, to help other people write and, inspire them to do that. Have you always been doing that, or did it kind of you know, come full center a little bit more after your book came out?
Oh, it's totally Natalie Goldberg's fault. I went to, if people who don't know her, she's a best-selling author, 15, 16 books. And the one most people know is Writing Down the Bones or Wild Mind. Those are her two probably best-selling books. But I took a course from her in Taos, New Mexico in 1996, shortly after my father died. And I was probably manic, but had not yet been diagnosed. And so I came home and convinced my husband that we should sell most of our possessions and move to Taos. And we did. And he was, he was at a place in his professional life where that worked for him. He could do that. And so we lived in Taos for 3 years, and I was her assistant for almost 10 years. I assisted her from a little bit in 96 and then from 97 till 2005. And I did move back to Ohio in 2000 because Taos was not the right place for me, and Central Ohio is home. And there's a lot of reasons, but that's another book that's in draft form also. But when I left, she said, "You've been with me for, you know, 3.5 years. You've been my assistant. I've taught you what I know. You need to take it back to Ohio and teach it." And so I've been teaching very small. I mean, I think the largest class I ever taught, it was 30 people, but I've spoken to larger groups. Yeah. It's fine. Here in Upper Arlington, where I live in Central Ohio, we have it's like a Parks and Rec program, but it's adult education. They have a very rich adult education program. So I've been teaching there just a couple times a year, teach writing practice. And then about the same time, I met a woman here in Central Ohio named Shannon Jackson Arnold. And she had started a mailing list of Central Ohio writing events. And she would write just a couple paragraphs and then send out a list of the events she knew, which at the time were 4 or 5 events. There were maybe 2 bookstores plus Half-Price Books, and there was the university, but she usually didn't tap into that. And so it would be, you know, 4 or 5 events. Well, then when she moved to Wisconsin, she contacted me and she said, "Hey, Nita, do you want my mailing list? Would you like to continue this? Because it seems like a good service." And so I think she had, I don't know, 100 people on her mailing list or something like that. And so I renamed it Right Now, and then eventually renamed it Right Now Columbus. And once a month, I send out this email that sometimes it has an essay, sometimes it's just a little roundup summary. It's aimed towards Central Ohio writers and readers, but then it has a calendar that has all the events that are author readings, writing workshops, anything like that that would interest readers and writers. And it's all based in Central Ohio. So now there's, you know, sometimes there's 40. One time there were 80 events. Which
was my gosh.
But yeah, I mean, it's funny because Columbus is actually the 15th largest city in the United States, metropolitan area in the United States. Most people don't know that. And so now we have a lot of bookstores. And of course, we have 4 or 5 different colleges, and they're always bringing big speakers in. So that's been my kind of public service. So the teaching and then that just fortuitous thing where Shannon chose me to continue her newsletter. That's been my thing since I started teaching in 2000. And I think she moved in 2002 or 2003.
Wow, so
it's
long
been
time.
18 or 19 years I've been doing that. And now I brought in another person to help with the newsletter, because as I started getting more involved with the book marketing and, you know, the things I'm doing with Mango, that I really needed some help. And so Tammy Kamen Meyer is now the editor, and she's writing most of the essays. And we have somebody that does with the research, and then I pull it all together because I have the tech. I understand all the tech. And so it's going strong. I think I'm just like an advocate person. I was a lawyer for 10 years.
You know, I didn't realize. Okay.
I was a lawyer for 10 years. I was a partner in a small firm in Dublin, and I had a major nervous breakdown in 1994 and haven't been able to kind of pull together a day job since, but gratefully writing allows you to be very flexible, as you know. So that's what I've done. And then all that time I'd write, articles in Dog Fancy, Dog World, Buddhist America, you know, different magazines and things like that, a couple in Writer's Journal. And I have practiced meditation and tried to get published and just kept writing.
Well, I'm really, there's so much I wanted to ask you about, but I'm really impressed that you Well, obviously, I mean, writing is so important to you. So it's just, you know, it's probably a form of meditation for you as well as your regular practice of meditation. But
absolutely.
Right. And, but you stuck at it for so long to get that first book deal. Was like, when that happened, was that like crossing the finish line of your first marathon? Because they were both basically marathon experiences.
Yes, very similar feeling. I have to tell you the gold star story. So I had come up with a plan with another friend of mine. I had called this friend of mine who's very involved. Her name's Tanya Cassell, and she's an editor and does all kinds of, you know, coaching of writers. She's an amazing woman. Excuse me. And I called her and I'd said, I think I want to self-publish this book. I just, you know, I think I'm, because I had had such pain from being rejected from the other book I'd tried to pitch that I thought, oh, screw, I can't do this. And yeah. She said to me, she goes, she's British, and I'll do her very bad, her British accent very bad. She said, Nita, if what you wanted was a name with a book with your name on it, you would have done that 15 years ago. So she just told me, she said, let's just come up with a plan. So we did. So A was try to get an agent, B, try to get a publisher that doesn't require an agent, and C, publish independently, whether it was private, self-published, you know, mm-hmm. publish my own. Mm-hmm. And I always like to say I was at B99. If each of those categories had 100 ticks, I was at B99 when I stumbled onto Mango and Brenda Knight. I'd actually contacted Brenda several months before we went into, you know, we ended up having a deal, mm-hmm. but she didn't get one of my emails.
Oh.
She just thought, in fact, she said she was so gracious.
She thought you blew her off.
No, yeah, she oh. thought, she said, she did kind of, well, she said, oh, I thought somebody else picked you up. And I thought, in my wildest dreams. But, you know, she was being gracious because I guess that happens to her, you know. And yeah. So I was just very tenacious. But, but yeah, it's just it's been a long process.
Well, it's very inspiring that you stuck it out as long as you did. So, you know, you should be very proud of that. And I'm sure it does give some of the people that you cross paths with, you know, some hope
and I just turned 60 too. So it's not like I'm a spring chicken. Oh, I know what I wanted to say. And I'm not sure if this will get cut out because I sort of lost track of what the heck I was saying. But so one of the days, very shortly before I got back in contact with Brenda and was able to negotiate a deal with her, I had said to my husband, well, it looks like I'm not going to get the gold star, and the gold star being a traditional publishing deal. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to go. And there was this place this community room I used to go right in before the pandemic. And I'm just going to go and work and, you know, we'll see what happens. And I was still sending pitches. And so I went to my place I worked and then I was getting back in my car. I had packed up, was getting back to my car to drive home. And I looked down. And on the ground, between my feet, by my driver's side door, was a gold star. I picked it. I mean, it was filthy. I picked it up. I picked it up. I washed it. I framed it. I have it in my hands. I'm like, you wanted a gold star. Here you go. And within, I'd say 2 weeks, I was back in touch with Brenda, and we were working on the deal. So it was just like, okay, all right, fine.
that's awesome. That's a great story. I mean, you know, it just... You know, you're meant to do something. You just got to keep going after it. And it happened for you. And I think it happens for you. Just, you know, you never know how long it's going to take, but you just got to keep going if you really believe in something.
I believed in this story. I believe that it had a positive trajectory. Mm-hmm. I was very careful, as I said, not to say running cured me. I'll never have to be on meds again. My life mm-hmm. is perfect. I was very, very careful not to say that. And also to say running's hard. I mean, some days running just is difficult.
Yeah.
It's not great. And so it's not always the happily ever after story everybody wants, but I get so many people that say, oh my gosh, you were honest. You were authentic. This is what mm-hmm. I needed to hear. I needed mm-hmm. to hear real. I needed to hear reality. So, so it's been so gratifying.
No, that's awesome. And it's still doing really well, correct?
Yeah, I know.
Did it kind of have a second wind? I mean,
yeah, that's what it feels a bit like. I shifted gears because I was invited to co-author the writing journal You Should Be Writing. And so I kind of shifted gears toward that and wasn't putting as much energy into podcast interviews and guest blogging, things that you do to market books mm-hmm. besides yelling at people, hey, buy my book. It's not affected, by the way. And so I kind of shifted gears, and I think it dropped a little bit, but it seems to be getting, I don't know, it's finding the right audience. It seems to be finding more and more of the right audience. And I was very careful to try to write, I don't want to say a timeless book, but a book that's not stuck in time.
Agreed.
So it does have dates in it, but, you know, instead of saying a particular brand of something, I would use the category, because the category still exists. I have this very good friend that wrote this fantastic book called The Dog Ate My Planner. And in the book, she refers to her BlackBerry all the time. And so it's still a great book, but it's dated because of that. So I was very careful with things like that to just try to think about, okay, long term, hopefully 10 years from now, somebody will still pick up this book and find it an inspirational story. And I think I did that. I think that's part of it too. And I'm learning about marketing. I'm learning what works and doesn't work.
Right.
That's part of it too.
I mean, some of it, I guess, is kind of tried and true, but it just keeps changing with the environment that we're in, you know, with social media, it keeps changing. And I know that for myself personally, my first book I self-published way back in 2009, and I think that might even have been before Amazon had their self-publishing thing. I found an editor, I found a layout person, and I went and had... My eyes are bigger than my stomach, but I had 2,000 copies printed up in Portland, Oregon, you know, way back when. And they're gone now. Some of them donated, some of them handed out, some of them sold. I mean, you know, it was like a business card for a while. But you know, I've tried a lot of things through the years. You know, I've wasted money on some things, and other things I've been kind of clever and were kind of cute and worked. And, you know, you just kind of just throw spaghetti against the wall, right?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of bad advice out there too.
Yes.
And I really wanted it to be easy. I wanted to pay somebody to do it, which as it turned out, I didn't have enough money to pay somebody to do it.
Right, it's expensive.
I mean, I was clueless about that. Or I wanted to do the things that were the easiest. And what I'm learning is that like in social media, quantity, well, just Twitter at least, quantity works because your tweets have a lifetime of like 6 seconds. Mm. And so using tools, I use SmarterQ, but using tools like Hootsuite, whatever the tools are to schedule posts and just have them going all the time. So I don't have to be there. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be tweeting that. It looks like I'm on social media all the time. I'm not. So learning things like that was so helpful because I was sitting on Twitter all day trying to, you know, think of clever things to say. And it was crazy. So learning that, and then learning the importance of email lists and learning to connect with people like you who have podcasts. I'm not in a place right now where I want to do my own podcast, but mm-hmm. I really enjoy talking to people. And so getting on podcasts, or I do guest blog for other places, things like that, where you can find a common thread so that I'm helping your audience, you're helping my audience. You know, we're together in this and not seeing it as, oh, I have to outsell this other person, or, oh, this is cutthroat, or, you know, all of that, just changing my whole mindset about it so that it's more authentic to me, finding finding like, where do my readers hang out?
Well, exactly. That's the key. Cause I think before I was just like, had this huge wide net. It was just exhausting and just kind of got lost in the shuffle, to be honest, probably. And so it is about finding your readership.
Yes. Yes. And going where they are and then being okay. Cause people would unsubscribe and I'd be crushed. And
I know.
I had this one woman friend who's been writing for many, many years. And she goes, she just said to me, she goes, Nita, that's a good thing. You don't want to pay for email addresses of people who don't want to read your work. Mm-hmm. And it was just like rocket science. Let them go. You know, somebody else will find you. And so that all of that stuff has been so helpful.
I'm to be honest, I'm probably going through a little bit of a burnout phase right now myself, and just kind of taking a step back, and because I've been going at it hard for so long, and not just with books, but like promoting films and this and that and TEDx and, you know, it's all kinds of different things. And it's just like, oh my God. But I'll come back with a bang and renewed and you know, and
yeah. Well, let me just say something though about that. Because that the burnout to me is a signal that I'm, it's like that I'm, well, you, like you said, you cast a very wide net, which is great if you can do it. But the burnout to me was a signal that I hadn't found the right place to be.
That I like that.
I needed to find that narrowness. And then the other thing that I'm going to quote Natalie because that's where I heard it, but it's probably a Zen master she studied with. But she talks about letting the world come home to you. So you step forward and trust that when you step into the world, it will come home to you as long as you are authentic, as long as you are putting yourself out there. And because I'm a chameleon, I'm a shapeshifter. That's what I did. That's how I stayed alive in my family. That's how I stayed alive in school. That's how I did well for as many years as I did practicing law. And so I'm having to unlearn that, to just be me and to find the place where I can really share something that's authentic, that connects with people. I mean, I don't want it to all be about me. I want it to be helpful to others, but it's my thing.
Yeah.
And that helps with burnout, because if I'm just doing my thing in a narrow area, it's just less exhausting. Cause I was so fried after a year of trying to promote this book in every nook and cranny. I mean, Mango has been very, very good to me, and they will never tell you not to do something. I mean, they were basically like, sure, go do that. And that too. And that too. And yeah, that too. Oh yes. And here's something else. I mean, that's what they'll do. And so it's up to me to self-regulate.
Agreed. And I definitely, you know, and I've talked about this before, so I'm not going to beat a dead horse, but having my health experience last year gave me permission to get off the hamster wheel a bit and just really identify what are some things that I do enjoy doing and I don't enjoy doing. And I'm coming back, I think, a more authentic version of myself, and it's still kind of shaking out, but I still know where it's kind of headed, but yet I'm just kind of coming back into like, who am I really? Because before I kind of, you know, had this pressurized version of myself that I needed to be perfect and pious because I was writing self-help books. And yeah, it's just, that was no fun at all. And so I just want to be me, you know? And then and so this trip I went on this last year was great because I was anonymous to everybody and I could just go and I could just be Brian and just kind of get in touch with some of those parts of me that I either were afraid to show or whatever, you know? And so I'm definitely in a transitional phase right now and it's all perfect, but
I followed your trip every step of the way there on the Patreon. And, you know, I just love that because I could just see you unfolding, unraveling, because I mean, you were wound really tight.
Oh my God, yes.
You were juggling so much. I mean, when I met you, you were in the midst of it, and watching you, you know, have the crisis, respond, you know, I mean, that's tough stuff, and respond in the way you did, taking care of yourself. So, I mean, that was just a beautiful example
of a
person going through something and figuring it out as they went along. And that's what we're all doing. I mean, that's the trick. That's the joke. Nobody actually knows what they're doing. Really?
We don't. Right. Some people are just faking it really well.
Well, yeah. Or we think kidding. I mean, no, they are. I do. I mean, we used to joke about that at the law firm. And the funniest thing was finals week, our last final, like we would have, and in law school, you only have 3 tests a year. The entire year. So your entire grade. And then the final is your entire grade for the whole year. You had like one test. And the pressure was insane, but I lived in a house with 3 other law students, and we would be, you know, sitting in front of, we'd have 4 spoons sitting in front of a gallon of, you know, Rocky Road ice cream or something. And we'd be like, we are the future leaders of America. And would you trust us with your multi-million dollar estate? I mean, that was the joke. And that, I still feel that way. Like we're all just, you know, trying to figure it out. And some, we figure things out. We do know things. But if when I get that imposter syndrome and I think I'm clueless, I just remember, yeah, you didn't know how to you know do anything when you got out of law school either, and somehow you made part of it.
Well,
it's going to be okay.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because I think a lot of people do have it. And I've definitely had it in a lot of different times during my life, you know. But yeah, you know, ultimately, it's just everybody has it and everybody's gone through it. And everybody who's anywhere, like maybe up the food chain in whatever job they have or field, they've had it at the beginning of it too, right? And so it's just ultimately, which we've already kind of been talking about, it's so important to just stand in your own being, in your own power of just your own authenticity, and just let things be what they're supposed to be. And not try to be anything else but yourself, because it's so tiring, and it's so not fun.
I'm like getting vertigo from nodding.
Yeah,
you can't see me, but I'm like,
I mean, my whole joy was killed along this, and most of my journey of creating all the stuff that I did, because I just kind of, you know, felt like I needed to keep pushing, and things were happening really wonderfully, but they weren't meeting my just incredibly lofty expectations of what I thought they should be at that particular time in my life. But I wasn't ready anyways.
That's a good point. I have accepted that I am a person who will always set high standards for myself. I will always raise the bar.
Yeah.
And I am trying to make peace with that and find a way to relax in that, because that's just who I am. But there's a way to do that without, and that's what the meditation piece has been for me. And I get that too with running too, that I can get out there and be in the zone of just, you know, going. But that there's a way to hold that with grace and hold that with kind of an open handedness without having it to be like a fist. Because that's what it was before. It was like I was beating myself in the head with my own fist.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I'm the same way. But it really is. There's once we kind of, it's all about the self-awareness of it. If we can identify it and know that that's okay, we're wired that way. Okay, what can we do to kind of just step into it in a more enjoyable, grounded, you know what I mean? Just process.
Yes. Yes. And for me, when I see it now, I can kind of chuckle a little bit and go, oh, there you are again, my old friend. Oh, hey, you know, and it's
yes,
alarming. Oh, Nita, you know, it's not that. It's a different mindset. And in meditation, they talk about equanimity, about having kind of a relaxed nature, no matter what arises. And so I'm trying to combine that with just my characteristics. I mean, this is just who I am. I've always been a high achiever kind of person that wants very goal oriented, externally motivated, very driven by outside things. And that's just probably who I'll always be. But seeing that and not fighting it, accepting it and going, oh, there you are again. That shift is, I'll still struggle with it, but it's better than it was. I will say that.
For sure. And you know, I don't want to speak for you, but I know as I've gotten a little bit older and probably become self-aware in that department too, and also just getting repeatedly slapped in the head because I wasn't paying attention to it. But the more that I've learned how to just self-acceptance and self-love, that kind of helps a lot of that kind of,
yes,
not necessarily the desire to be, you know, produce good work, but just the need to do it eases away a little bit.
Because
we're not trying to look outside of ourselves.
Right, right. That's the thing, is be able to have some inner peace so that the things I do outside of myself aren't the only marker for how I am, for who I am even.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is good stuff. I'm going to take just a little bit of a half step to the right and go back to are you able to identify a few helpful writing tips maybe for our listeners right now?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And it's going to go back to know yourself. I'm currently in my 15th year of National Novel Writing Month, which is a challenge, worldwide challenge, where people try to write 50,000 words of fiction in the month of November. That's 1,667 words a day.
Wow.
And for me, that structure is very helpful. I'm also in book contracts, so it's helping me write that book. But I'm not writing fiction. I'm being a rebel, which is totally okay. And I know myself. I know that I get excited every November when this, in October, when I know NaNoWriMo is coming around. I enjoy, in the before times, we actually met in person sometimes. I enjoy that camaraderie. Now we meet on Zoom. I enjoy that. So knowing that that is something that works for me is so important. I have a really good friend who's also an amazing writer who cannot stand NaNoWriMo. Every time I talk about it, she's like, ugh, she just gets upset, and it does not work for her. She's the kind of person who has to work much more all year long. And I work all year long, but, she can't do that binge kind of thing at all. Similarly, knowing whether you're a plotter, a pantser, a planster, which is kind of a little bit of both, knowing that process and letting that be okay and not letting anyone tell you that there's one way to write. The other thing is, okay, so let's say you wrote this magazine article and process A worked for you. That doesn't mean that that's going to work for you for the next article.
Good point.
So be open to that. Be open to the fact that you may change or the demands of the thing you're trying to create may change. Have that flexibility. That's really important. But the, I have been studying with Natalie Goldberg for all these years now, and she goes back to timed writing, no editing, don't think, shut up and write. And she uses it really as a meditative practice. She's a Zen priest, and that's her background, and that's where it comes from. And so that's how I work. I mean, I work in small bursts, small increments, because it creates a pressure cooker. It helps turn off the inner critic. It's just the way I work. And that does not work for everybody. Some people, they need to get paragraph one perfect before they go on to paragraph two. And they write books that way. And they get published.
Wow.
I mean, I can't do that. So I think it's just kind of like drop the shame. And if whatever you're doing isn't working, go someplace else and find something that will. Because, I tried to tell the entire world that Natalie Goldberg had the thing and she's the only way to do this and da-da-da-da-da. I was wrong. There are plenty of people who have to do it a different way.
Right.
And that's fine. I mean, I cannot stand to plot. And yet I had to write an outline for the proposal for the book I'm working on now. And that outline has helped me. It was very, very bare bones. And I changed it. But it did help me having that bit of structure. So, yeah. So there's, I mean, I don't know if that's a tip at all, but just going back to knowing yourself and don't be afraid to try something different.
Well, I think that's a huge tip. Cause I mean, I think there are so many different ways to go about something. I really don't write that much. I only write when I feel inspired to.
Natalie doesn't write every day.
Yeah.
She might write, like a 10-minute writing practice or three pages just to sort of clear her brain for the day. But that's not going to be a book necessarily.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
When she gets a contract, then she goes into full gear and, but everybody's different.
Yeah. And I think, we're both nonfiction writers, obviously. Right. I mean,
yes.
Other than a couple kids books I've done, but
you see my novels. They're red.
No, they're
like really bad first drafts.
No, it's all good. I mean, what I've found works for me, everything just, a lot of times I'll write a blog or something and I'll just file it away and it'll come back later on in a whole new different way for me or just expand. And a lot of times I have goals of writing a book based on my RV trip and using that as a container for it. And I took tons and tons of voice notes and emailed them to myself along the trip. So I have, probably 70,000 words of just, voice notes. And I'm still not exactly sure what it's going to look like, but I know once I start kind of putting stuff together, it'll start to show itself. And that's kind of the way that my work has always kind of come around. I'm not exactly sure when I'm digging into it, but it always, the chapters kind of formulate, and it just shows itself. And I know that's completely different than most people.
No, it's very intuitive.
I am an intuitive writer, definitely.
Yes, that's what I am. I am an intuitive writer, and that just does not work for everybody.
And yeah.
I started, I think about 4 years into teaching writing practice, I opened the class with a disclaimer and said, I'm about to teach you what works for me and what I learned from Natalie Goldberg, and it may not work for you. I don't know. I hope you'll stay, and I hope you'll listen. I hope you learn. But if it doesn't, no problem. There are plenty of people who teach plotting, character development, trajectory, all of that stuff.
Well, you know, I'm embarrassed. I mean, my SAT scores were horrible. I mean, I'm really good with numbers, but just not with like math, you know? And then I wasn't very good in grammar either, but I can write. I couldn't tell you what an adjective is. And I know that's really, really weak and embarrassing to admit that, but I mean, I could look it up and memorize it, but I'm just an intuitive writer.
You can hire people to do that other stuff. That's what pro writing aid is for, and Grammarly and all those.
Yeah, but
Word has a filter on it, you know.
Well, yes, that does help a little bit, but I mean, it's like I'm one of those people that I can spell well only because I guess I have a photographic memory with words. I can just tell if it's like looks right or not. You know what I mean? Even though I'm not, I don't know. I should just shut up while I'm ahead. But
I know what you're saying, and there's just so much. I mean, there's just so. Oh, I'm going to sound so skeptical here. What I don't know, I can't think of the right word, but there are a lot of people that make a lot of money convincing people that they have to write a certain way.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
They are. And that's their thing because it worked for them. And so I think that's why I was so careful in my book, the memoir, to not say my way is the only way. And then in the writing journal that, I co-authored, what we did was we pulled a bunch of, and the co-author is Brenda Knight, who is the publisher.
Yeah.
But we pulled a bunch of author quotes because we wanted to peep, and Brenda goes to all these conferences and she just hears other people at the podium giving what she believes is horrible advice. Mm. And she's, you know, seen a few authors in her years of, she's been in the publishing industry, 30 years. And so, so she said, let's just pull some of our favorite quotes and put those at the top of each page and let that be the inspiration. And then the rest of it's, you know, kind of blank pages. But that was the whole point, was to just try to give people some better, not better advice, but just different advice, different options.
Not out there. No, I like that. I like that. And I guess my little rant a second ago is just try to just let people know that, you know, anybody can do it. And you don't have to, there isn't a formula. You don't have to be worried about all that stuff. Like, you know, that if just write, and then you can always clean it up and it can always be organized, but just do it.
And the other thing is now you are the gatekeeper. With, it used to be that you had to reach a certain place or do it a certain way, the end product, in order for it to get out in the world. But with the indie publishing movement, I mean, it's complete. I mean, yes, you want to put out good work, and yes, you want it to be a quality product. But it can be something completely different than what the gatekeepers wanted, because you're the gatekeeper now.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, the sky's the limit now. And
right.
There are no excuses.
there are no excuses, and there's lots of opportunity.
For sure. Let's see. So tell me briefly, we're starting to wind down. Tell me briefly about your meditation practice and what that looks like for you, because I know there's lots of different ways we can do it.
Right. I am a mindfulness, insight, vipassana person. That's the main practice I use.
Okay.
So comes from the Theravada tradition, although I'm not really in that tradition. So it's very basic, be right where you are, keep your head where your feet are practice. And I learned it from my husband, who I was dating. This guy I was dating many years ago, and he was...
I've met Ed.
Yeah, you have met Ed. And but he said, you want to sit? And I went, huh?
There's a first line.
I know it wasn't our first.
Okay, all right. Hey, baby, you want to sit?
Yeah, that would be it. Yeah, it was almost like that. But yeah, he had studied Rinzai Zen with John Dido Lori at Zen Mountain Monastery, and he had moved to Ohio not very long before I met him. And so we were dating, and he said that, and I said, what? He said, yeah. He said, we'll just set the microwave timer for 5 minutes and, just try to focus on your breath and just try not to fidget. I mean, that's basically my first meditation instruction was just try not to fidget. And so we did, and I thought it was weird. But after I did it for a while, I realized that I had sort of already been doing it in different ways. Hmm. And there were other times when that state of being in the moment, completely in the moment, happened automatically to me. Hmm. And then, of course, it happens very naturally when I'm running. And I also use meditation when I'm running intentionally. And so I just continued going to kind of retreats with him. And then eventually I got my own, more of my own practice. And then Natalie, of course, is a Zen practitioner. And so we, at the retreats that I co-taught with her, I would lead the meditation group sometimes. If she was, in interviews with students and things, I would lead the meditation group because we do meditation several times a day there. And mm-hmm. then I study with a man named Shinzen Young, who's another, kind of meditation teacher. And then more recently, I went to, it's called Sage Institute for Creativity and Consciousness in Taos, New Mexico. And I took it on Zoom during the pandemic year. To become a meditation leader, a certified meditation teacher, essentially. And Sean Murphy, who is a Zen master, forget his Zen name, but he's Sensei Sean Murphy, leads that organization. And so now I'm actually doing koans with him, which is so much fun. It's like little puzzles, riddles to make your mind snap. You can't figure them out with your head at all. So that's my practice. And I have just sort of always, I've been meditating now so long that I'm never not meditating in some ways, I'm mm-hmm. always coming back to myself. And I've written another book about meditation that I hope to get published, but that didn't stick. So right now I'm working on a book about how to make any movement form a meditative practice of this particular type, mindfulness practice.
Is that the one that you're working on with for Mango next?
Yes. Yeah. The working title is like how to make every move a meditation.
Nice. And
it also has my mental health in there also. It'll be my, it's because it's my spin. So there's always going to be a mental health angle to it.
Yes. When is that supposed to come out?
Hopefully fall of 2022.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks. That's been it's fun to be working on something that somebody else wants. For me, that's what what's fun for me is to have that right now, to have that relationship. And like I said, I have had a good experience with them so far. So yeah.
Yeah. No, I did too. It was almost like the best of both worlds.
Yeah. There's a lot of freedom. I mean, they really let you do a lot of creative things. And they help a lot. So
yeah. No, I agree. I feel very grateful. So does Scarlett still run with you?
Yes, she does. Oh my gosh. Yes, she does. Now the dog in the book, I always have to say this, the dog in the book was Morgan.
Okay.
And he was four when we started running in 2010. So he lived to be, 16, I think. And
okay.
He went to the great dog park in the sky. And now we've had Scarlett for 4 years.
Oh.
She runs. Yeah. She really needs a run. The best space, the quietest space for me to do this kind of thing is in our bedroom, and she's not supposed to be on the bed, and she just came barreling in. We started recording and just like jumped on the bed and like stared at me, just, you're gonna make me get off the bed? We need to go run. She's my dear.
No, that's awesome. So, wow. Thank you so much. This has been a really, really an enjoyable chat. And, I've had many enjoyable chats with you, but I'm glad you were able to join us today. And,
Thank you.
Can, yeah. Oh my gosh. Anytime. And I just want to share your website. It's Nita Sweeney, NitaSweeney.com. And I believe that people can get a free ebook from you if they go there, correct?
They can, right on the homepage. It's called Three Ways to Heal Your Mind.
And oh, awesome.
It's my little toolkit, the three main ways I always joke that it's the three ways I stay on the planet, but that's, not everybody gets
No,
if you've never been suicidal, you might not get that joke.
Well, I mean, I'm not laughing. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
And you can laugh. It's all right. It's kind of I have a very weird sense of humor, but it's three ways to heal your mind. And it's just a few pages, and you'll end up on my email list, which is easy to unsubscribe. That's the deal. I give you the book, I get your email address.
So why would they want to do that?
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm going to send them a little tip every once a month. I usually send out a little note about what's going on with me and maybe a nice article I've read or a book review. I try to send something that's helpful to people, but not too often. I don't try to do it too often. So
nice. Yeah. Well, thank you. And I know this will be very helpful for a lot of people. And, I wish you well with all your other writing projects and the book that's going to be coming out next year. And I hope to see you again in person one of these days.
Oh, yes. And good luck with your adventures. I just can't wait to see how it continues. And it's just been great to watch so far. So more will be revealed.
Well, I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Spark. To learn more about host G. Brian Benson, his latest best-selling book, Habits for Success, and this week's amazing guest, please visit the show notes. And we love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, as Brian always says, be well, be creative, and always be yourself.